And breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in. Oh my God, if you breathe at that speed, you would hyperventilate. Hello, I'm Drew Droege, and it's time for another episode of Minor Revelations, the podcast where we just, I don't know, get into it and go where it goes. Unlike every other podcast that's so formally scripted and planned out, right? Oh, we're here for the weird moments and the awkward and the I don't know what that means and who am I and all that great, delicious stuff that we love to unpack. I have some fun theater stories that I want to share, but I want to say first, if you're in New York in June, there's a song about it. Join us for Pride. I'm going to be there doing several shows. And so I would love for you to come say hi and please come see Thursday, Friday, Saturday night at 7 and at 9. I am in the Golden Girls Live, the LA production of the drag Golden Girls. We do episodes of the Golden Girls. It is Jackie Beat as Bea Arthur, as Dorothy, Sherry Vine, as Rue McClanahan, as Blanche Devereaux, Drew Droege as Betty White, as Rose Nyland, Sam Pancake as Estelle Getty, as Sophia Petrillo. I did that without, why didn't I write this down? Because come on, I'm like, oh, I got it in my head. That's it. Yeah. So it's a blast. It is so much fun to do. We've done it in LA for 8 years. And I was very excited to get the opportunity to take it to New York. We're doing it at a new club, Red Eye, Daniel Nardiccio's new club, which is on 41st. It's in Hell's Kitchen. Thursday, Friday, Saturday, the 22nd, 23rd, 24th at 7 and 9 p.m. Tickets are going very quickly for that. So do get on that. Or Monday, the 26th, we will be doing it on Fire Island at the Ice Palace. What? So check out all the socials for all of those things, because we have one show, I think, scheduled on Monday, the 26th at 9 p.m. at the Ice Palace. I miss live theater. We talk about it a lot on here. Sorry if it's a boring topic for you, but it's truly my favorite thing. And with Golden Girls, you know, I normally play really surly, you know, furious, hateful people for some reason. And I get in the Golden Girls to play the really sweet one. I learned early on, you know, when you play characters who are touched in that way, you can't play them dumb because there's nothing to play. So I think of her as just a child, but she's very sweet and she feels her feelings. And I have had moments when Drew Droege comes out and there is no Rose Nyland to be found on that stage. Sometimes we have really lovely but very drunk audiences, and we were doing the show a lot in the basement of Casino del Campo, which serves the strongest margaritas you can imagine. People always write us afterwards like, I am so sorry, I think I had some sort of coffin varnish and I lost my mind in your show. And so, you know, I understand, we've all been there. But there was one time in particular in which someone in the audience kept full voice saying, every time I talked, full voice, she would say, I love you. And it's one thing to be heckled and people talking back and going, oh, that's what she said. And you tell them, Blanche, or whatever. Like, that's annoying enough. It's annoying enough when you have your phone up and you're filming. Don't do that. You're not at a concert. You're never going to watch that. You're just wasting time. It's no fun to play for that. Don't do that. But like, saying I love you is kind of terrifying. You don't know me. If you knew me, you wouldn't. No, but just that it was just really unsettling to have someone go, you know, you're doing this big loud drag show and everyone's like, bah-dum, 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 like 80s style sitcom comedy, and then just have this really sotto voiced, I love you. I love you. I fucking love you. After every time I talked. So I did everything that in my power that I knew to do. And I, you know, I would kind of look out and kind of make this, you know, the gesture with my hand, like, let's stop talking in some way, whatever that means to you. Imagine what I'm doing with my hands right now. But, you know, and then at one point, I think I turned and I think I literally put my finger on my lips, like, shush, please stop. I hear you. One point I walked in the blackout, like after a line, I went into the audience because they're right on top of us. And I just put my hand on her shoulder and just said, please, please stop, please stop. So, I mean, it was building up and they were just wasted. Let's just be honest. They were wasted. They did not know that they were just doing all this so obnoxiously. So the show is going, and I think that it's died down for a bit. I think we gotten our point across. The very last line of the show, I am playing America's sweetheart, Betty White, as Rose Nyland, the kindest, sweetest person who's never done anything wrong. I mean, yeah, I think she got the teddy bear back from the little girl and pushed her out. That's the meanest thing Rose Nyland ever did. You know, remember that? So this, we're getting to the very end of the show. The very last line, we thought we had made it to the very end. And I have a line and I say, please, people are looking at you. And then there's one line after that. Okay, so it's the next last line. I say, please, people are looking at you. And this person, front row, drunk, full voice, just said, I'm looking at you. And I turned around in my voice and I said, would you please shut the fuck up? And of course, everyone started laughing. And then this I was on stage with Selena Luna, who I love to death. And she had to like give the last line and then the show was over. And it was super weird. And the cast was mad at me for just ruining the final moment of the show. But I had to. I couldn't handle it. I couldn't wait till the very last line. I should have let it go. Drink responsibly. You know, don't talk back. If you do, you're going to pull back a stump. Not from me, from these other drag queens I'm up there. They're monsters. I mean, I'm a good person. I'm so kind. Speaking of kind, I want to thank the following contributors to our Indiegogo campaign. Oh, Dave Holmes, Eric Larson, Victor Kinosh, Neil Milani, Nick Kinder, Stephanie Courtney, Sherry Vine. Speaking of Sherry Vine, Golden Girls, Jennifer Smith, Candy Schuler, that's my mother, and Pete Zayas. Oh, these are just near and dear, lovely people. Thank you all so much for donating. Oh, one more thing. We are finally launching our Patreon on June 28th. So for only $4 a month, our revelationaries, you like that? Yeah. $4 a month, you become a revelationary and you get exclusive monthly bonus episodes. Plus, you get access to videos of all of the full episodes of Minor Revelations. So $4 a month, we get an extra awesome bonus episode and then video of all the other stuff. Just head to patreon.com/minorrevelations with Drew Droege, or you can search Minor Revelations with Drew Droege in the Patreon app. Now, let's get into it. Theater. Hi, guys. How are you?
Doing well. How are you?
Wonderful. You're coming at us from Dallas, Texas today.
Indeed. Yeah. The land of dreams, Dallas, Texas.
Oh, sure. Michael, you're doing a show. You're directing a show there, Silver Foxes.
That's right. We were about to do our final four performances. It was a 2-week run, and I stayed. I didn't have to stay. They didn't really want me to stay, but I decided to stay.
Wait, why didn't they want you to?
Well, they didn't want to pay for it. And they didn't technically. Oh. Well, I mean, listen. I said, I'll pay to keep myself here because I wanted to see all the performances because I'm really super proud of it. It's a new play called Silver Foxes by Stan Zimmerman and Jim Berg, who were writers of Golden Girls and Roseanne and Gilmore Girls. They've been writing together for literally centuries. And I've gotten to know them over the years, and they brought this play to me, and it's like a gay man's Golden Girls. It's about three old guys who move in together in Palm Springs, and it's really funny and really sweet. And we've been doing it here with this local cast in the Round, in a theater in the Round that I used to go to when I was a kid, because I'm from Plano outside
That's
Dallas.
That's so cool.
It's been really cool.
Michael did such a wonderful job directing it too, and because something that I noticed right away when I saw it was it felt like these characters like fully lived in this house. They had figured out how to inhabit it in a way that felt truly authentic to what was going on, which I think is so hard to do in a short rehearsal process.
How long was your rehearsal?
We had really 3.5 weeks of rehearsal.
Oh yeah, that's tight.
And a new play, and then like one preview basically. Oof. You know, with a new play, that's really because you know, if something's not funny, we got to get rid of it, and you know, there's like you gotta keep working on it.
They were rewriting as you were going.
And in fact, we implemented some rewrites just yesterday for the final five, and I think we're gonna change because one of the new rewrites was a stinker. So I think we're going to try something even newer tonight, just to keep working on. Because the play has been kicking around for a while, but it's got a licensing deal. So before it is actually published, they wanted this production was sort of like to figure out what the published script would be like. And
I love that doing that though, because I feel like so many people have had that idea of like, oh, there should be a gay men's Golden Girls because gay men love Golden Girls and they're so connected. And it's like, and as our generation ages, like we're sadly getting our first generation of, a full generation right. of out gay men, right now, like elderly out gay men as like, because obviously lots of reasons.
Right.
And so it's like, we're going to see more and more. And like I feel like in my 40s, our friend group's always like, oh, and when we get to our 70s, 80s, we should all get a house together and live together and like have a Golden Girls type thing. I think that's going to happen a lot. And that's something that a lot of people have done. And it's like, who better to do it than Stan and is it Jim? You said
Jim, Stan and Jim, who
didn't they develop it as a potential series?
It was originally developed as a series, but I think sort of like, what you said, Drew, that like a lot of people have had that idea, but who better than Stan and Jim? I actually think that it's one of those things where, it's like too good of an idea for anyone to like jump on, and somebody just needed to try it.
Right.
I can imagine like executives being like, yeah, I thought of that.
Right. Like, right. Well, and also, it's just like having personalities that people can relate to. And we're still teaching the world that there are different kinds of gay men in the world and different kinds of gay people, not just men, obviously. And so I think that that also might be a thing like, people aren't always the smartest about our culture and understand that we exist in lots of different shapes and forms. And so that's so cool.
And this company in Dallas called Uptown Players, and they did Bright Colors.
They did. Yes.
Yeah. They did your play. Yes. And actually Paul, who played the role.
Paul Williams, who I just saw the other day, who I love. Wonderful.
Oh, you did? You
saw him in LA? He was here. He was in LA for Carol Cook's memorial. Carol Cook, Broadway legend, 99 years old, had an amazing thing, and he flew in for that.
Natural hair.
Natural hair.
She had amazing red hair until the day she died.
This amazing shock of red bubble of hair. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very excited to hear, I just love bringing people on to talk about like anything they've not talked about before. So I'm excited to hear like anything you haven't shared with me or with each other or online or what?
Well, this is a mutual secret of ours. It's and I guess it's not entirely a secret. I mean, it's something that you might have even guessed as someone who knows us and other people who know us, but it's something that we wouldn't necessarily talk about.
We just, when we're at home, we'll privately like talk about it. Because we've been together so long so that we know.
And how long have y'all been together for our listeners?
Almost 15 years. It'll be 15 years in October, so 14 and a half years.
So like the idea of secrets at this point, it's either like I don't remember the secrets or the things I haven't told you at this point.
Or they're things I have no intention of ever telling you.
Right.
Or the grave.
But why not for a podcast on a Friday morning?
Or we've told each other them by this point. Like that's so we really couldn't, we tried really hard to think of something.
But
you guys are the first couple I've had on the show, by the way, in all my years. I've never had a couple. So yeah, this is very exciting. And of course, I love that it's the two of you. Of course, it's very special and awesome.
So even though, we are people who love, like we go to a film festival and we'll actually see the movies. We go to the theater all the time. Our secret is that we are basic bitches when it comes to going to the movies.
And we prefer if we were deciding between, say, Tar.
Yes.
Or
Taken 3.
Taken 3. We would choose Taken 3.
We would go to Taken 3.
Or what was that movie with the girls stuck on the pole?
Oh, yeah. That was great.
Oh, yeah. I remember that. It was called Height.
It was called Fall.
High.
Fall, yeah. We went to see that at Lincoln Center or Lincoln Square, right by Lincoln Center. And we just loved it. We were chomping popcorn, and on the way out there was this asshole Upper West Side lady who was walking out with us, and she was like, well, wasn't that terrible? And we were like,
that was that amazing.
We're like, what are you talking about? What? Why did you stay?
What were you expecting, lady? Were you thinking like?
we were in Edinburgh doing the Fringe Festival years ago, and on the day off, one of the days off, we had a huge brunch of people. Like, we had a bunch of people at
everyone we'd met.
We
there.
Threw at our apartment in, and then we walked to the gay area of town, and instead of going to like a bar or having brunch there, instead we go into the cinema and watch Piranha in 3D because it had just been released. And our row was so boisterous, and two people in front of us kept like glaring at us because we were being so obnoxious. And then
I was like, what did you think this was? It's called Piranha 3D. Were we not allowed to laugh?
Right. What were you thinking? Like,
when there's a penis floating in the water at you in 3D, it's not meant to be serious.
Not meant to be like contemplative, yeah. Or, yeah. You know.
This ain't the 400 blows.
No.
But then like two or three days later or something, we were in London for one night. And we were having dinner with Lady J. It was the three of us. And we're sitting there having dinner, and we decided instead of going out in London, we wanted to see Piranha 3D again.
Again.
So we saw it like within the same week twice in two different places, one of which was like an only night in London. We chose to repeat that movie.
Well, it's like, it's sort of like some of these movies, these crazy, basic, huge, you know, like, they kind of get stuck in my head. Like, for me, it's like I become addicted to them. It's sort of like there's a song in your head. You know, like when there's a song in your head and you can't get out of your head, and the only way to get out of your head is to listen to it again.
Right.
I sort of feel that way with these kinds of movies sometimes. Like, one time I went to see this Nicolas Cage movie called Knowing.
Okay.
It's this crazy like movie.
Book of Revelation movie.
Yeah, he finds like a
scroll. Oh, okay. I vaguely know what you're talking about. Yeah.
There's all these numbers, and he deciphers that the numbers are dates. And that when the dates line up, there's going to be a natural disaster. And so he starts to like be able to predict these natural disasters. And he ends up going there. He shows up when a subway car derails and runs over a bunch of people in New York. And then when a plane crashes in a field somewhere, he's always ends up being there. And it was extremely dark and very violent. I mean, the violence was very real. I mean, not that real, but it was like, you know, people getting smushed by. Anyway, I saw this movie alone. And I became so obsessed with it. I couldn't stop thinking about it that I made, like, I think either the same day or no, the
it was,
next
I think
day.
It was the same
I think
day.
It was the same
you went
day.
To the matinee, and then that night, Ali Blockinger was coming over and you dragged us
I made
to
them
it.
Go see it. I saw the same movie twice in one day, this weird, basic-ass horror movie.
Yeah. Why everyone else is texting us being like, did you see the new Julianne Moore? And yeah. We're like, we will.
Can't wait. And then another one, when Taken 3 came out, mm-hmm. love and any Liam Neeson movie we'll go see. We went to see that one about the train, the one about the plane.
That doesn't narrow it down.
we go see them all.
But wasn't the plane just called, the plane movie was just called Plane?
No, that was the.
Oh, no, that was.
Gerard Butler's new plane movie, which
right,
I really want
right,
to see.
Okay, yeah.
It was just called Plane. Mm. So when Taken 3 came out, we had seen them, or we were into that. I can't remember, but like,
oh, we had seen them at the group we were going.
Oh yeah, we decided. Oh yeah, yeah. We decided to like invite a group of people to go see it, and so some of them hadn't seen some of them, you know, hadn't seen the first two. We were like, well, you got to see them. So we literally invited everyone over at like 3 p.m. We watched Taken 1, then we watched Taken 2, and then we all went to the theater to see Taken 3. That's the kind of basic ass bitches we are.
And then we all like very seriously discussed which one was better, why, how they were different, even though they're the same movie three times.
I love that because I don't know that, I mean, I wouldn't call that basic. It's just like, you know what you like and you have a real like thirst for it and support for it. And I mean, like, you know, I don't, you know, a lot of people have said they don't believe in guilty pleasure movies, but I've always felt that way. It's like, you like what you like. And so, right. You know, yeah. I'm not as much into those. I do love Fast and the Furious movies. That's like that I will absolutely do. Final Destination, I love. I love horror movies. Like, you know, I've already seen Scream 6. I've already, like, I've seen all.
You've already seen Scream 6?
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to go soon.
And it's like Freddy, Jason. I mean, that's whole my world of like, I love all of that, like growing up and all that. So I get it. And then I also love the really like difficult 3 hour long character driven. I love complicated.
Michael,
I know Ryan, you're more a fan of that than you are Michael. Like, you know, but
I just get sleepy.
Well, it's also partly something that we've talked about, and we kind of talked about at the beginning of this podcast right now, is like you go to the film festivals, you're often going to support a filmmaker or someone you know that's in it.
Right.
You see all this wonderful stuff, but you end up, and with independent film, often you start to, for me at least, I start to see so many of my colleagues involved with things, so many things that make me think about myself or think about my life or my career or my like dreams or whatever. You start thinking in those ways that when you go to these kind of movies, the action, big blockbuster, guilty pleasure movies, for me at least, that stuff goes away and I can really put entertainment at the forefront and not my work sort of battling my ability to just simply enjoy something.
Right. Well, I'm that way with comedy. Like I have to know that it's going to be like an amazing, hilarious, really well-made, really well-written and performed comedy for me to just relax and enjoy it, other than like me sitting there and giving it notes. And I hate that I'm like that, but I just can't divorce that. And so you're watching it going, why was that? That was as good as they ended on that line, or that was the best or whatever. And it's just sort of like, it's hard. I think it's also just like how our brains work, because sometimes I will fall asleep when I'm overstimulated. Any movie that starts with too much talking, usually men in a room in suits talking about a plan or about it, like something they got to look at, and they're pulling down charts and graphs and saying, here's, you know, we got to, you know, find, you know, Bobo or whatever the fuck it is. My brain starts to go, and I will fall asleep. Like, even on a full night's sleep, my mind starts wandering. I have a really hard time with plot. I have a hard time as a writer with plot.
Right.
I don't write plot very well.
I have a friend named Betty Gabriel. We went and saw the Fast and the Furious movie together once. And she sort of is like you, where she sort of shuts down as things, if it's like too actiony or too complicated in like the buildup of a story of like an action movie, she'll start to like just doze out. And at one point in the first 10 minutes of one of the Fast and Furious, she turns to me and is like, didn't you tell me one time that you can return your ticket if the movie's only been on for 20 minutes? And I said, yes, that is a thing. And she just got up and left. She didn't even say bye. She just grabbed her bag and left. I was left alone sitting there. No, I think my friend Lars was there too, she just left. And I thought she was maybe going to the bathroom, and then she never came back.
Funny.
I texted her later and she's like, sorry, I just got my money back and went home. I was not going to be able to pay attention to it.
Wow.
That's so funny.
No.
But yeah,
I don't think I do that. I'll suffer through and just be like, all right, it's whatever. I'll, you know, enjoy this for what it is. But I can totally shut down, because it's too many things. And then I just kind of go, wait, what? And then my mind starts to wander, and then I fall asleep, and then I wake up and I'm like, oh, I don't really care. And I just try to enjoy like what I'm looking at. And I just kind of go, I feel like a confused old idiot. Yeah. Like, I can watch Kate Blanchett doing like an hour long interview at the beginning of Tar and just be riveted the entire time and just be like, I watch a character like that, my brain. And I know people that saw Tar and found it really boring, but I found it riveting. I could have watched another 3 hours of it. But
I mean, I enjoyed it thoroughly, but I also watched it at home. I didn't go into the theater, and I bet Michael will probably skip that one.
But it's also like, I don't believe that you're better for liking Tar over the Taken 3, like, or vice. I just think it's like, you like what you like. And so the idea that things are considered prestige.
Your castmate said something once that was so fascinating. Luke, he said something about
Luke McFarlane.
No, Luke.
Luke Tenney.
Tenney.
From Shrinking.
He was on he was talking on something, and he said like, he's so tired of this debate about movies that are good, because not every time you go to the movies do you want filet mignon. Sometimes you just want a bag of Skittles, and like, all of it has value. And if you can't understand that people don't want to constantly be challenged with a big, luscious meal every time they go to the movies, you're missing the world of other films that are out there that are more popcorn or candy driven.
Well, and just like variety and like knowing what you like, and you know, when you're like, I'm going to go see a Scream movie, I have a very different like set of expectations than when I'm going to go see something that's like Merchant Ivory and I'm going to really have to like pay attention to this. Yeah. But I also feel like I've seen crap that's considered important every year. There's something, usually the best picture Oscar winner is something I can't stand. Like, I don't even like that perspective. I wish I wasn't that, but I'm like, that was certainly not my best picture there. But then how do you even judge what's the best? Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. You like what you like. It's good to know what you like. And
why
that's
do you
what's
think
so
that
warm.
Happens, Drew, that I've always wondered, like, why is it so often the case that the movie that wins best picture is the one that nobody really wanted?
Because it's the same reason with casting. It's like, because 15 people agreed on it. Like, there was enough people that, like, some of the other ones are so extreme passions for, like,
yes, because the system is skewed, and it has been whatever they started that waiting process for best picture. They ensure that the most like polarizing movie will never win best picture. So Midnight Cowboy would never win best picture. Silence of the Lambs would never win best picture. Like, this.
Wow.
Any of the ones that have won that you're like, whoa, that actually won. That really edgy, subversive thing.
Parasite.
Won. It's all by committee. Like, what I agree with Ryan, because it's like they rank them. So when they have to rank 1 to 10.
Yeah.
So usually the one that gets the most twos and threes is what wins. So it's not someone's number one. So if you made everybody pick their first choice, it's like last year with Power of the Dog, which I did have to watch twice. I did not get it the first time. I did not enjoy it the first time. The second time I watched it, knowing the ending, somebody convinced me to watch it a second time. And I was like, oh, this is a masterpiece.
Yeah,
but it's a difficult movie. I feel like it was not one that people were like, oh my God, let's go. Hey guys, let's get together and watch Power of the Dog. Like, you're not going to do that. But it's incredible. That is last year's, to me, like the best film of last year.
Interesting.
But it took some work.
If you have to watch it twice, is that?
Exactly. It's just one of those that's like, I knew it wasn't.
Yeah.
But the movie that won last year was Coda. Which is truly one of the worst movies I've ever seen. I can't believe
last year
Coda, which is like a, which I can't like, no. And it's not challenging on any level. It's not honest. It's not true. I mean, I hate it. And I'm sorry, whatever. And say what you will about it. But like, it's the one that everyone goes, oh, well, Coda's sweet. It's got a good message. And I guarantee you enough people hated Power of the Dog, or they hated West Side Story, or they hated the one that like that a lot of other people loved. So they would give that a 1 or a 10. Like, yeah, you know, they would either love it or hate it.
Right, so the movie
that gets the most twos and threes rises to the top.
Yeah.
So they've ensured that
like
the medium movie is going to win.
Yeah.
But that was Crash was before.
Crash was before that. Yeah. Homophobia and Scientology at work. Like, why Crash beat Brokeback Mountain and Capote. And like, there were so many that year that you're like, if not, you know, yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
What's your favorite movie this year, Drew? Can you say?
My favorite movie this year, I would say I did love Tar. I loved Bones and All. I loved Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. I loved Women Talking, I loved.
Oh, I liked that too.
Yeah.
Mine is Triangle of Sadness.
I loved Triangle of Sadness. Loved it. Crying laughing at it. Like, I haven't laughed.
Good. Oh, I know.
Like, I was like 13 years old laughing the first time I saw a John Waters movie. I mean, like that, like at the core. And then the third act is so brilliant. And what it says about gender and power and, you know, but I think it's fantastic.
I loved it.
Yeah, me too.
I loved it too.
We howled when we saw that in the theater.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about y'all? What were your favorites this year?
I think that would be my
favorite. That would be my favorite.
Triangle of Sadness.
Really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. What are the other movies?
I don't even know. Maverick was blast.
Love Top Gun. Of course, you know, we love Top Gun. We saw that.
Sure.
We saw that 2 days in a row, I think.
I feel like I saw that right after I saw y'all. I saw that in San Francisco, right when we were all there.
Oh, right. We like told you had to go see it.
I went that night when I was waiting on my plane was delayed, and I was like, I'm going to go see Top Gun too. It was so much fun.
So good.
Great.
We saw it at the Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard in a packed house. And like, it started with that that little video from Tom Cruise saying, thanks for coming back to the theater. And like, oh, by the end of that video, I was like, okay, I'm just going to join Scientology now.
Because nobody looks better than Tom Cruise.
I just was like, he's just like, I get it. I mean, again, like where, you know, like it's a horrible, horrible religion, but damn, that was a good movie.
But then we also had the privilege of going like the next day or whenever we went with
kids, yeah,
Rob and Avery Clyde and their two children. And so we got to, I was sitting next to Rob, who's the dad of these two boys who are like, you know, teenager and preteen, and watching him watch his kids watch Top Gun, Rob was an emotional wreck the whole movie, just being like, I can't believe that this kind of experience I had when I was around there, you know, I was older than, he was probably older than them when Top Gun came out, but like just the shared experience. I love that movie.
And that's also like why we go to the movies. It's like to have that experience in a room with people that we're not at home with. And that's why the experience is more connected to theater in that way too. Yeah. It's like we're feeling something, you know, and that movie is pure nostalgia. I mean, that's why we come back. We want that, you know? Minor Revelations is supported by Scruff. So after you listen to the podcast, go on there and give your buddies a woof. Or do it now. I can't tell you what to do. Thanks, Scruff.
When you sent the email about being like, what could you reveal that to the partner? So I was trying to think of something I could reveal to Michael. And I thought of something.
Oh my gosh.
I thought of it yesterday. And it was something that it started as like just a casual lie that I just couldn't ever say wasn't true because I think it would make you feel crazy. And
oh my God.
I've decided, I'll tell you.
Oh my God.
What is it?
Fuck.
I have never seen Arthur.
You've never seen Oliver?
Arthur, which is Michael's favorite movie.
It's my number one favorite movie.
And I've never seen it. And you always quote it. And you
do always quote it. You quote it a lot. Yeah.
And you're obsessed with it. You talk about it all of the time.
It's Mitch Silva's favorite movie too.
And I would just
dog Arthur, yeah,
pretend that I had seen it as well because it had gone.
Billy and I quote that constantly.
No, I know. And I laugh and pretend like I have any idea what they're talking about, but I just haven't had the courage to be like, I've never seen it because I thought you'd be upset.
I am upset.
Isn't that crazy? Like, I'm so mad. How dare you? We have this weird thing, and I don't know what it is, that we are so ashamed to admit that we don't know something. And it's sad in society. It's totally fine to admit any book that you haven't read. You're like from, I for one have never read Catcher in the Rye. Like, it was never assigned to me. I was told at a certain point, I was too old to read it and whatever. I just have never read it. And nobody like looks down on you like you've never read Catcher in the Rye, like, or whatever. But with movies, it's this thing where you just kind of play along and act like you've seen it. And I've done it before too. And during pandemic, I saw so many movies that I had claimed to have seen that
I've
never
watched. I know. There's so many that I've claimed and I was trying to think of all of them because there's tons. But the only one I could think of that Michael would feel anything about was Arthur.
Wow.
It's so good. You've got to watch it. I haven't seen it in a million years.
Well, I kept encouraging him to be like, you should show this at FA, this like group that we have that we watch a movie and we share a movie from
so
our past.
So you could watch it for the first time.
Yeah, so I could be like, you should show that. You love that movie. Look, it's on. I kept trying to get you to do it. And you're like, well, I think everyone's seen it. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, Liza.
You don't know what any of the...
I don't know. I've seen like clips that you've like put on. Like sometimes you'll send a clip of like...
Just the other day, we have this friend, Billy, who also... Billy and I constantly quote Arthur. And
I know Billy.
Billy Morissette, yeah. Because
you just never get those references. And the other day... And we also, with Billy, every day, we share Wordle. Our Wordle score with Billy.
Oh,
so we're on a chain with Billy, and every day we share our Wordle score. And not long ago... It was Moose. Wordle was Moose.
Okay.
And once we all got it, there's a whole run of jokes about the moose. There's a moose on the. Somebody shot a moose, and it's on the wall in the home of Arthur's fiance's father, and he walks into to the room, and he's brought into the room, and he's drunk, and he sees the moose. He's left alone in the room, and he looks at the moose, and he says,
"What does he say, Ryan?
I don't know."
He says, "This must be very embarrassing for you." To the moose. And then when the father walks in, he's standing there, and it's in an awkward silence. And he goes, "You must have hated this moose." And so Billy and I were quoting the moose jokes, and you had no idea what
I know. And I would write, "Ha ha 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 ha." And you had no idea. I had no idea what was happening. I mean, it's because it comes up so much,
right? And now, do you just know, like, oh, that must be from Arthur if they're doing one of those things?
Oh, I know it now because he gets this, like, shine in his eyes and his, like, head tilts. And then I'm like, oh, he's doing Arthur.
And we do the voice, you know. Oh, my God.
I have a thing about, like, if I know people do it that, I usually, and I don't get the reference, it's like, it's either Seinfeld, which I never watched, Game of Thrones, which I never watched, or sports. And, like, those are the things that, like, those are my blind spots that people will say things or reference. Or, like, with sports, it's like a name that I don't know. And I'm always like, oh, it's a sport thing. But I'm so fascinated by why we're so ashamed to admit why we haven't seen something, because there's nothing wrong with that. But I know that. Like, I had never seen Lawrence of Arabia until pandemic, and I watched it. I sat and watched for 4 hours, cried. And I was like, who do I call about this? It's like, Drew, it's Lawrence of Arabia. It's a great, you know, but
I think it also has to do with people's reaction. I think, like, part of it is that you don't want five people screaming all at once, "You haven't seen this!" And then start telling you all the scenes. And suddenly there's too much pressure to see it. And then you really will never see it because now you hate all of your friends and you hate the movie as well.
Yeah.
It's also like, you know, that there's that meme of Kermit looking sad, and it's me. It says me watching somebody watch a movie that I love and not reacting the way I want them to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know.
It's so true. I mean, the last time I showed, I watched Arthur, I showed it to our friend Talene. She was staying with me in LA, and I showed her Arthur, and she kept falling asleep. And I was like, and finally I just stopped it. I was like, I'm not gonna let you sleep through this. We'll watch something. I'll watch something else. You sleep. You just sleep.
It's also the worst when you just can't fight it and you just have to sleep. I mean, that's just the most awful feeling when you're like, oh God, this is my friend's favorite movie. And no, I got to show Boogie Nights to my friend Kane for the first time. We went and saw that, and he had never seen it, and he loved it. I think I was like, you kind of have to love this movie. Like, if you don't.
Like, I showed that with my classmate, and he was blown away. And Mallory. Yeah. Mallory had never seen Boogie Nights.
We showed Talene Jaws. That was really cool. She'd never seen Jaws. Gosh,
I have a mentee from college. It's like, I got matched with a mentor. Or sorry, I'm the mentor of this young kid, and he's in, like, the piano department. And Titanic in 25th anniversary just came out. So we went, and he had never seen Titanic. So to watch this person who's, you know, in his 20s watch a movie that I've seen 400 times, just to see if it even, like, holds water, LOL, in any sort of way for him now. And it resonated so much for him. Like, he loved it.
Have you all seen, maybe we talked about it, have you all seen In New York, Titanic?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so amazing. Oh, and so I just got to give a shout out to Ty Blue and the cast of Titanic. If you're in New York City and you want to see truly the most spectacular, wonderful parody, but also a love letter to Titanic, go see Titanic.
And Celine Dion.
Yeah.
Marlon Mandel's Celine Dion is just next level.
The moment where they figured out how to do the car sex scene.
Oh.
In Titanic is
it's
revelatory.
The whole thing.
It's really,
I love them all so much. And, like, I got to do a lot of shows with them in LA and parody musicals, and they were always so nice to throw me into these musicals because I cannot sing, and they would put me in that. And I just like to see that on this level and how successful it's been. I'm so happy for them because it's so special, and to see that actually, like, work and do. But
it's so funny. Like,
these movies affect us at different times. I mean, I think what this is all about is, like, you know, it taps into this child in you. And so, like, it makes you feel these things that you don't feel in real life all the time. And you can't feel in real life all the time. Yeah. You shouldn't be able to, you know, that would be too much.
Yeah.
But
It's also like when you first fell in love with movies, what was happening in the cinema at the time, or what you were interested in during those early adolescent years. I think that sort of like music, it sort of resonates the most with absolutely. You sometimes, and you hold on to that.
I feel like I had a you know, I think I was saying this on another episode recently, like a lovely but kind of boring childhood. So I wanted like adventure, and I wanted a fantasy, and I wanted, and also you tap into things you don't realize. Like I didn't realize that how much I loved when Alice Cooper was on the Muppet Show, or when Freddy Krueger would come out, or like Thriller video, or and Labyrinth, or all that, like my introduction to drag in that weird way, or like that a sense of like monsters I loved, Clash of the Titans, Wizard of Oz. Those were movies.
Return to Oz.
You know, that I was like, Return to Oz, I love. Yes.
I loved
so
that
dark.
Movie.
I watched that with my brother and his family, and we were like watching that. We're going, this is such a dark movie saw when I was like 9 when it came out. And it was like, you know, you, and so you love sharing those with people because it feels really pure. It feels really safe. You know, like, you know what's going to happen and that thing. And so when you meet somebody that you really dig and you really love, and you're just really like feeling connection, and they haven't seen this movie. And I think there's also that too, like you don't want to disappoint that person that you really,
yeah,
that you love, and you're like, oh yeah, yeah, I've seen it too. It's great. It's great. Oh yeah, sure. Because you know of a movie, but it's like,
well, it's also, you can tell in their face if they want to share something that's so profoundly affected them. Does
right.
that outweigh them spoiling it? And I always feel, because Michael says I spoil things. It's because sometimes
I'm the worst. I spoil things. Right?
Sometimes I think like the excitement of sharing something to someone, particularly if they're probably not going to see it, outweighs the spoil. And so sometimes I'll, you know, like with Arthur, all of the, if I was to constantly say I haven't seen it, anytime he'd, you know, beam with excitement to talk about it, that his spoiling of it or continuing to talk about it outweighs me being like, I've not seen this, and then us having to figure out when we're going to watch it.
No, I get it though.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's like you're sort of weighing the who wins in this moment, the spoiler or the truth teller.
Yeah, but sometimes you're like you're talking about a movie you've seen that nobody in the room has seen, and you'll be like, you're not gonna see it, right? Okay, this is what happens, they all die.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm really bad. I have to just say, I've had to learn to just shut up, and I've had enough friends tell me like, okay, Drew, don't tell us what, you know, blah blah blah. But I also I get so, it's such an exciting feeling, and I feel like we just go through life, it's just so like the mundanity of things when you see something. So like, I want to share this moment with you. I want you to feel as great as I felt in this thing. And also we can't reenact it. So all the time, like you try to explain it and people go, And they'd have that kind of dead inside. And you're like, oh my God, now I'm in it. I got to finish this.
Now I have to finish this, and they're bored.
Now I know what missionaries feel like.
But the spoilers, you know, like it's not just when you spoil a twist, you know, it's not just like a whodunit gets spoiled, or, you know, like some crazy reveal gets spoiled. It's like the feeling of watching something can be a spoiler, or like saying, oh, there, you know, it's
the tone. You spoil the tone.
You can spoil the tone, and you can spoil you can sort of spoil the thing that made it great when you watched it, the thing that you felt when you watched it. If you tell someone to feel that when they're watching it, like sometimes it helps. It's like, you know, it's like you tell someone they're walking into a comedy. They know that they're supposed to laugh if it's funny. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's why we rush sometimes to the theater. Like Cocaine Bear came out, and we both were like, okay, we're definitely seeing that. We need to see it immediately because I don't want
any spoilers.
Any like, right. Have you seen it? Like conversations. And so sometimes, you know, like Tar, I could have. That one I saw it and I liked it, but I didn't care if people talked about it before I saw it.
Right.
But it's true. Like as soon as you get people's opinions, even if it's just, I didn't like it or I did like it, then it's all like, oh gosh, crap. Now my opinion is going to be swayed by their opinion.
I know. I used to love being the dissenter and be like, I felt differently. And at the older I get, I hate being the one. I hate not loving the movie that everybody loves.
Sure, yeah.
It drives me crazy. I hate it. And sometimes I just lie and go, yeah, it's great, because it's just not worth going into the thing and coming up with the reasons why and all the things. And then I'm like, in mixed company, I'm like, I just sound like such a sour bitch. Like, why can't I just enjoy the thing that everybody else liked? And I wish I did, but, you know,
I don't.
Did you
see that thing that Seth Rogen said about critics?
No.
He said something about how if critics knew how much they hurt people who make things by what they criticize, they wouldn't write them as much or something like that. And it's gotten a lot. I mean, maybe this is just my algorithm, but he's gotten some, you know, like blowback from critics saying this is our job, you know, like this.
Right.
And somebody made a really interesting point about critics, which I think is true. It's like critics, and this is why I don't read reviews ever, because, well, first of all, you hear about them anyway, and any little thing can make you crazy or sway you. Right. If they say something nice, then it wasn't nice enough. If they say something mean, then they're wrong, which is also crazy because obviously, right, you know, like the people who are saying nice things are just as wrong as the people who are saying bad things.
Sure.
But somebody said that critics' reviews are not for the artists. They never are for the artists. They're for the audience. And it's so true. I mean, some people really do, you know, I mean, we all do it. I heard that's good. You know, I heard right, that's not good. Like that's yeah, basically listening to criticism.
I mean, I feel like there was such an art to criticism and people would go to school to learn how to write. You know, you have like the William Goldmans and the people like that generation that would write, Frank Rich.
Yeah.
Who would write these really thoughtful, even when they hated something, they would eviscerate it, but they had reasons why. Pauline mm-hmm. Kael and whatever. I mean, she right, was notoriously like, you know, took out an entire page for Xanadu, an entire column in the New York Times, and her review just said, Xana, don't. And it was just an empty column. So you're flipping through the Times and see this empty column. And of course you're going to, I mean, like, that is the most scathing review you can give a movie because you're like going.
It makes you want to see it.
Because yeah, then you go, right. But I think like there's so few of those critics left, and the ones that, you know, I'm interested in reading, even when I like totally disagree with them. But then I think there's everyone's a critic now because of the internet, and everyone yes, has opinions. Right. So I wish that were true, but I feel like what makes me irritated is when it's like, okay, it's one thing if you're the New York Times, whatever, great, please. That can make or break up, especially in theater. Yeah. But like when you're dealing with like, you know, Sheila Shitweather at stagebeat.com, the only people that read those reviews are the artists. The only people that go and look on that are the people that, because no one looks and cares about what someone else says, like if you don't have the cred.
Right.
So you're kind of going, true, why are, you know, and so like, oh, sometimes it's like, and that's why like I don't get involved in like discourse on Facebook. I'm just like, I don't care what you think about blah, blah, blah. I post something and it's kind of like, you know, because everyone feels like their opinions are, you know, but you're right. It is this thing about like, I do think about like, it's so hard to make something and I don't like to, offline, I'm very opinionated about certain things, but I'm like, it's just my opinion. I don't like to go on and give, because I love to give shout outs to movies and plays and things that I love, TV shows that I love. I love to do that. Like, because I, again, just like we're talking about, like with spoilers, I want people to feel I'm like, check this out. It's so good.
Yeah.
And I love talking to people at whatever, but like, when I don't like something, I don't understand why the impulse is going to go, this is awful. Or is anybody else liking that? Why do people like this? I don't get it. It's like, call a friend. Like, don't put that out there.
Yeah.
Because it is hard. It's like, I don't.
Well, because it's just going to be hurtful. It's going to be someone that's going to hurt a lot of people, even if it's your friend who liked it. But like, it just, if you come across something that's like, I don't understand. Oh, and you're the one who's involved with it, it's just like hard right, to hear and hard to read.
Right. And I don't know. I think some people just like they want any sort of reaction or whatever. But like, it's just there's so much in all of that. But yeah, so I would just say it depends on the source. I mean, it's like with anything, it's just like, oh, do you trust that person's opinion? Great.
We have a friend who she told me when she stopped reading reviews, it's a long time ago. Her name's Brooke Bloom. And she was in this play that I think Paula Christensen wrote.
Oh, really?
Back in the day in LA. And she said she was reading the review, which was like a, you know, it was fairly nice review, apparently. She didn't make it all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
And she reads the first paragraph. And then the next paragraph begins, unfortunately, comma, Bloom. And she shut the magazine or the newspaper, set it down, and was like, I will never read a review. Right. But it apparently went on to say something about her strength as an actor inside of a character that had some trouble with like its narrative. So it ended up being a fine review of her. But it's just so funny that like the word unfortunately, comma, your last name
It's just that will drive you to madness.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, it's true. There's just too much. That's like, yeah. But also, even when you get a good review, you're like, I don't know what to do with that.
Yeah.
And then especially when you're in a live thing, you have to keep doing it every night, and you get a good review and you're like, am I too self-aware?
Yeah.
That I'm like, doing if I the can't thing that you cash like? That review at a bank, I don't know if I need it.
And you know, God forbid it's something specific in a review. I heard this story about, actually I heard this from Judi Dench. I happened to meet Judi Dench one time for lunch. I don't know her at all, but I did have lunch with her one time because the guy who played the ghost of Hamlet's father when we did Hamlet, who played my father, is really good friends with her. And he had me to lunch with her one time. That's the only reason I ever met Judi Dench. But she told the story about, we were talking about critics and reviews and stuff. And she had done The Cherry Orchard with John Gielgud. And I guess she was one of the daughters, and John Gielgud was playing Gaev, the uncle, who is this sort of sweet doddering old man. And he's always eating candies and talking about the candies in the cherry orchard. This is sort of famously, these candies are so delicious, you know. And and apparently in the review the next day after it opened, John Gielgud got specific notices about how adorable he was eating candies. And that night, he just ate candy the whole show. It was like suddenly a play about John Gielgud eating candy. He ate more candy than he'd ever eaten before. And it was like way too much because he read the review. John Gielgud, as an old man, read the review and became obsessed with the idea that people loved him.
One of the greatest actors ever. Like, yes. Is poisoned by that.
Yeah, yeah.
Poisoned. Exactly. Well, that's something that I heard from somebody recently that reviews came out and they were mixed. Or some, you know, mostly good, sometimes, you know, occasionally bad. And their therapist said bad reviews are poison and good reviews are worse poison.
Wow. Wow.
Which is so true.
Yeah, you have to kind of not pay attention to that. I mean, the only time I would care about it with my own shows in New York, because it meant, is the show going to keep going? Like a review. So that would be what I would care about. But otherwise, you're like, oh yeah, you can't take it in. You can't take it too much.
Well, I also, like, I tend to do, I think, almost exclusively new plays. And so sometimes I want to read the review because I want to know from a dramaturgical standpoint how this story is landing on an audience. Because sometimes I have found in the past, if I read one after the show ended, I used to not read them and sometimes read them after a show closed. I would read it and be like, oh God, I wish I read this before, because I actually think that there's something in it that I could have helped with a narrative struggle that the viewer had, that I'm a part of that, even though they didn't like say, Ryan didn't figure out the
book. Unfortunately, Spawn.
Do that. But there's things you read and you're like, oh, I could have been a part of that. Or like, that's actually a note for me. Hmm. In a way that I wish I knew that stuff. That's sometimes
it's weird, especially, I mean, in movies and theater, it's like, well, now what are we like? It's in theater, you're not really supposed to go back and change anything after the reviews come out,
right?
I mean, I guess if you're doing an out of town tryout of something,
you are,
yeah, which is kind of what y'all are doing with Silver Foxes.
Well, but that's not about review, that's more about, you know, like
finding it.
The laughs and all. It's more like we're treating it like we're in previews where you're using the audience. But in the theater, with a new play in the theater in New York, you do 2 weeks of previews and then you open and then the reviews come out. And if the reviews are all like, this didn't work, you're like, oh, well, we could have done it if only we. So it's like, we could just make the thing you're going to make. And
right. It's also one person's opinion that you can go, oh, you make yourself crazy. It's just like you listen to too many notes and you just kind of try to make everybody happy. And
right.
Yeah.
It's a good lesson for life. It's like, live your life, do the best you can, and listen to people you trust. And then it's like, otherwise you're like, all right, cool, I'm good over here doing my thing. And, you know, because it's just too hard. I think we also like grow up going to school and we like listen to rules and we have a teacher that tells us this, this, this to get a good grade. And we're constantly seeking approval. And then we become actors and writers and creators, which is all about that. Like, I want people to love me and understand me. And this is how I connect to this thing. And you're like, but you ultimately have to be so vulnerable and raw and like put that out there. And then also like not care at the same time. about someone liking you or picking you or giving you a good notice or loving you too much. And then that feels weird. And like all of it is, it's why we're crazy. It's why we're nuts.
We are crazy.
Yeah. Well, you guys, we're wrapped on, we're at time.
Oh, no.
We have to give a shout out to the darling on your lap, Michael.
Oh,
we have to say this is McKinley.
President McKinley is here. Has been here.
President
with us.
McKinley, she's been such a good girl. Look Very at that.
Actually, we began the podcast by talking about how Michael or I. My comment was that Michael did such a great job making in his play directing it to feel like the house was lived in.
Yes.
Really, I don't think it was you. I think it was the fact that Kinley was at rehearsals every day and she would sit on the couch or sit on the bed while the actors would do their scene. And she would just sort of sit there looking at them as if she was the pet of the house. And it's truly, I've been in rehearsal with her. I've been in rehearsal with other dogs. It is truly true that they are emotional support animals. And they...
Oh. Absolutely.
They keep every room, every rehearsal room at a temperature that can't get too heated because in the end of the day, the dog is going to come over to you and it's just going to pop the air out of everything.
Oh,
we have so a scene in the play.
Everyone needs a dog at a rehearsal.
Yeah, there's a scene in the play where they turn a bed, there's a fold out couch. They fold the couch out into a bed. And every time we would rehearse that scene, she would, as soon as they unfolded the couch, she'd run and jump into it. And Burrow, she just saw Ben. She had no idea we were acting.
Oh, yeah.
And what's also interesting is, like, in real life, if I lose my temper or we get into an argument, Kinley knows and she gets really upset. Uh-huh. But in rehearsal, which she's been in lots of different rehearsals, in rehearsal, if somebody loses their temper or people have an argument, she doesn't care.
Isn't that funny? I know. I've noticed that before with the animals. They're just sort of like, they're so honest. It's like, that's why you say don't put an animal on stage or a baby on stage because they can't not be present.
Right.
And so they're so like the thing that actors are trying so hard all of our lives to be that dog or that baby. And it's like, we just have too many other things, but yeah, that dog knows, like,
yeah,
you know, like there's just, they're always in constant now, right now, which is like the goal, like in life. And I love that. And but she's a special one.
Oh, Kinley's she's a real special. We talk every once in a while, like when she dies, which may or may not happen, but when she dies, there will be so many people who are sad or who will be touched by her, you know, because she's met so many people. She's been in so many rehearsal rooms, so many dressing rooms, on so many sets. She just knows, so she travels all over the place. She's, you know, she's 15 pounds, so she can fit under the seat in front. So she goes everywhere with us.
Yeah.
And she has her own Instagram, Kinley and Dawson.
Oh, absolutely. Please follow Kinley and Dawson.
And I guess we should give Instagram. A shout out to Dawson, the 20-year-old cat. Because
And you have a 20-year-old cat that I've known since he was 0.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah,
so that's cute. So
sweet. Now, where can we find y'all on the online and the handles?
Well, I'm on the Facebook still, and I'm on the Twitter still at Michael Urie, and then also I'm on Instagram at Michael Urie Likes It.
I am not on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at Ryan _ Spahn, and on Instagram at just Ryan Spahn.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for doing this.
Oh my gosh.
So appreciate
delightful.
It.
Love
Happy Friday.
It.
Have a great end of your run, Michael. And
thank you.
I hope to
Are
see you
coming
soon.
To New York soon?
June. We're doing Golden Girls in June. We haven't announced it officially, but we're going to do the Golden Girls in June in, I let you know for Pride.
Oh my God.
I've still never seen your Golden Girls show.
Yeah, so please come.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what venue?
Daniel Nardiccio's new club called Red Eye. It's like on 41st and 9th. It's new and it's like a coffee bar club with a black box theater in it. And like it sounds like an amazing new space.
I cannot wait to see it.
We're doing New York. We're doing 6 shows in New York and then a show at Fire Island on Fire Island.
Oh my God.
Right after that.
For Pride. Wow. How fun.
That's I'll be there in June.
Awesome.
So yeah, it's during Pride. It'll be like at the end of June. If it's during New York Pride.
It's the last weekend in June.
That is something that is.
I hope I can talk about it. I don't know. We haven't announced it yet. So y'all are the first to know, but yeah.
Well, wow. Well, I just tweeted it.
Great. Perfect. I got them canceled.
It was so good. I saw it in Palm Springs and it was just amazing. You're gonna love much. It. I can't wait for you to see them do it. It's so
I mean,
so
I fun. Get obsessed with looking at the photos.
It's so wild. It's so crazy. But thank you all so much for doing this. Gosh, we so appreciate
we
it.
You.
And I love y'all. And yeah, I'll see you soon.
I wish everyone could see the adorable curl you have coming down.
Oh, they can. The Patreon subscribers are gonna be able to see the curl. And see both of your gorgeous faces and your daughter and your darling daughter.
Aww.
Oh yeah.
Well, hi Patreon.
Hi okay. Patreon.
Thanks oh, for thanks y'all.
All right, love you.
Love y'all.
Friend of the Pod Productions.